analysis, and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good afternoon. The weather tonight, patchy frost after 3 a.m. Otherwise, it's going to be clear with a low around 35 and north winds 5 to 8 miles an hour. Tuesday will be patchy frost before 8 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 64, light and variable winds. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 41 and calm winds. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 68 and calm winds. Wednesday night, patchy fog after 2 a.m., otherwise partly cloudy with a low around 48 and light southwest winds. Thursday, same thing, patchy fog before 8 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny. And Thursday night, it'd be partly cloudy with a low around 48. Welcome. This is the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And my name is Larry Cartwright, your host, and I am very pleased to have with us two very attractive young ladies. My privilege. I'm going to say it.
Go ahead.
Okay. Lisa Razumovich.
Perfect.
All right. Who is the Director of Infection Prevention?
I am.
And I have an easy one, Lydia Arnold. You know, I could say that. You know. Lydia, you're probably going to have to come up or pull that a little closer to you. There
How's
you
that?
Go. That's better.
Okay.
Now, I ask this of everybody because, I don't know, it's just a fetish of mine. But I ask people how they got in this type of work. And, you know, once in a while I get somebody else say, oh, something happened when he was 10 years old, and mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do this since then, you know, and that's why I do it. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I do a show just before this, so I ask those people the same thing. So it's not like I'm just picking on the people from the medical mm-hmm. center. But another time a fellow said to me, well, I'm married, got a mortgage, got taxes, got car payment, and I got two kids. I need a job. And this one came along, and I've been in it for X amount of years. So I was just curious.
Yeah.
Let's start with you, Lisa. How did you get
into
this?
Sure. So I've actually been working at the Hunterdon Medical Center for 14 years. I started as a nurse.
You don't look old enough to have 14 years there.
Thank you. Yeah, I started as a nurse working on one of the medical units there. And so 7 years working in healthcare. And then the opportunity came up to specialize in infection prevention. So I was always interested in teaching and then microbiology mm-hmm. and all that stuff in school. So it just seemed like the perfect fit. And so now I've been in this position for 7 years.
Okay.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
See, I find that interesting how people, you know, mm-hmm. start in one like a nurse and, you know, and then, oh, I'd rather do microbiology or something, you know, and go to something else. I just find that, you know, it's just me, my, you know, mentality.
Yeah, I knew I definitely wanted to stay in healthcare, but I had that itch of I wanted to do something more, something different. And mm-hmm. this is definitely different, and it's definitely more. So
there you go.
I got both.
I'm the type that, remember I said before, The guy was married and had four kids, me, car, apartments, mortgage, needed a job. That's how I got with Wonder Bread. But anyway, Liddy, how did you get into doing this?
Well, I think I've always, my entire life, wanted to be a nurse. I remember dressing up as Clara Barton in third grade. my mother was a nurse, so I think it was always in my blood. I actually started as an LPN.
Okay.
I was in college in Virginia, and I decided that nursing was really what I wanted to do. Then I went for my RN. I met Lisa working on 3 West at Higher Medical Center.
Right.
Then I left for a little while, went to teaching, then came back for home health, and I've been in
teaching in
Kane University and nurse for
nursing. Okay.
Yeah. And then I've been in this role about 4.5 months or so. It's really the best of both worlds. I get to still have a little bit of, you know, clinical experience and speaking with patients, educating nurses, and really being in a great setting.
You know, I find it pretty awesome for nurses. I really do. I have a real problem with that, okay? I can't watch when they give me a shot. I have to look the other way.
I look the other way, too.
She held my hand for my flu shot.
But I can't even begin to tell you some of the things that we and I did in the service in Vietnam. I couldn't think about doing them now. I remember one occasion at Wonder Bread in the plant, somebody's finger got cut off because he was not too brilliant and put his hand too close to thing, and it's where they cut the where they cut the bags and they cut the ties and stuff on it. And he running around. I found his finger and I put it in ice and gave it to the EM when he came. He says, I think we can get it back on. You know, I says, well, God bless you, because I'm not putting it back on. You know? But it's things like that. You know, you react and you do it because you have to do it. Me, I'm talking about, not necessarily nurses.
Yes.
But I have to do it if something happens. But God forbid, you know, after I get ill, I get sick, I get woozy, you know, I got to sit down and have, and I don't drink, but I have to drink water or soda or something, you know. So it's like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
But so what is, how did the infection prevention come about in the medical center? I mean, do you know?
Yeah, I mean, as healthcare started growing and the population of patients changed, infection prevention has been around since the beginning. Simple hand washing, that's the basics of infection prevention. So as, you know, way before my time, as we gained more knowledge and we learned about how do we prevent the spread of infection, how do we keep patients healthy even when they're in their sickest moments, we learned through research and knowledge. And so we learned how we can prevent infections. Mm-hmm. And there's still ongoing research because, again, the world is constantly changing.
In this day and age, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you stop and think 50 years ago, well, go back even further. Go 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Nobody washed their hands. You know, they'd take a bath, what, once a week or maybe once a month, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and you just wonder, would they have lived longer if they would have done some of these things?
Yeah, but there's definitely been advances in medical care that have allowed us to live longer, even though we do get sicker. You know, a lot of individuals out there have underlying heart problems or lung problems, but we're still able to live very long lives because we do know how to provide better care. But I think the physician was, what, Semmelweis? Mm-hmm. That was a physician a long time ago, and he was working with pregnant women, and he noticed that the pregnant women were coming down with infections, and then he put two and two together and realized that when he washed his hands, the women weren't getting infections. So he started spreading that knowledge, and he started telling people in healthcare way back hey, listen, we have to wash our hands and it prevents infections. Nobody wanted to listen to him. And now we know that that really is one of the basics.
And now, Liddy, you know that almost every room, every place you go in a medical center has got, you know.
Oh, we have alcohol, hand sanitizer. We have soap and water. We have everything accessible and available for all of our staff and our patients to use.
Right, right. And, you know, when somebody's there, you go visit somebody, you know, at least I do anyway, because I worked one day a week at the hospital for quite a few years. Well, I won't say quite a few, but a few. And I worked in behavioral health and emergency services.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anytime if somebody I know is in a hospital, I always go, you know, they had the hand thing before, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you call it. I don't even know what you call it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You always wash in and you always wash out. And really, it's everybody's responsibility. You know, you go to a hospital and visitors expect the healthcare workers to wash their hands.
Mm-hmm.
But the visitors play a really important role as well because they're coming from
outside,
the community.
Right. And they're bringing God knows what in with them.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's important that, you know, we try and have all of our visitors only come when they're healthy. But same thing when we go in and we talk to the patients and we talk to the visitors and the family members, we always, Liddy and I, make it a point to say, you play a really important role when you're coming into the hospital to visit. Make sure you're healthy. Make sure that you're washing your hands when you come into the room, and then wash your hands when you're leaving the room.
Sure.
So it's everybody's responsibility.
Right. And how do you get patients how do you get patients that come to you? You know, are they in the hospital already?
Meaning, how do the patients come into our hospital?
No, how do the patients get involved with infection prevention and stuff? Are they in the hospital already, or are they recommended to you? Or
yes, it's a little bit of both. Primarily, we have the hospitalized patients that are the ones that are curious about what's going on with their healthcare. We try and have everybody take responsibility for their own care as well. We mm-hmm. want our patients to ask us questions. We want them to understand what they can do in their care. So when patients have questions about a certain type of infection that they have, or a lot of times we get, you know, patients that have an infection and now they're going home and they have their grandbabies at home that they don't want to get their, you know, the baby sick. And mm-hmm. so how can they stay healthy? How can they keep their family healthy? So they'll ask the nurse, and then the nurse calls us, and then we'll go and speak to the families.
And it's only if they ask, or do you speak to them anyway?
Both. We do try and do a lot of extra rounding now with the both of us in the department. So we try and do extra rounding so that we can go onto the patient floors mm-hmm. and we can just, you know, if the call bell's going off or we're walking around and we see somebody that looks like they, you know, want some company, we can pop right in and answer any questions that they have.
And you do the same thing, Lydia?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of what we do is behind the scenes as well. So making sure that we've got good products in the organization, making sure that, you know, the nursing staff and any kind of individuals that have patient care are aware of the best things that they need to do and keeping up with their best practice.
Right.
So some of the stuff we do is behind the scenes as well with education.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think because, you know, I would think you'd have to educate people.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, you know, everybody's supposed to wash their hands before they eat and do this and do that.
Yeah.
But when you stop and think, how many people don't?
Yeah, you're right. Or how many people go to the bathroom out there in the public and don't wash their hands?
Yeah.
We have, you know, and then it.
You know why I'm laughing? It's not because of what you said, but.
It's because you do that?
No.
We're going to have a talk when the radio turns off.
My granddaughter, who's just turned 21. She's my youngest, and she works. And we had a family gathering, okay, a little while ago, and it was in the summer because we were on our deck and everything. And the whole everybody was there. I got four kids all together and their wives and all that jazz. And she says, "I got to ask everybody here a question." I says, "Okay, Sam, what's your question?" She says, "Especially men." She says, "When you go to the bathroom, do you come out and wash your hands?" I says, What the heck kind of question is that?
Yeah.
I says, yeah, of course. And her brother said, yeah, sure we do, obviously. Uh-huh. And she says, well, where I work, they don't. She says,
yeah.
And you can, because of the situation, you can hear the toilet flush, she says, and they'll come right out. Right. She says, so you know damn
there's
well they didn't wash their hands. You know? So.
You ask people, you could walk around any public place and say, do you go to the bathroom and then do you wash their hands? And everybody will say, yes. But if you stand in the bathroom, now people might look at you funny if you're just hanging out in the bathroom.
Yeah, right.
But there have been studies where people stand in the bathroom and they just watch. And they watch everybody coming in. They watch them go to the bathroom and they watch them coming out. And there are far more people that don't wash their hands than do.
And it's like, that's stupidity.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you know. I mean, I don't like to think about it too much, but it is stupidity, you know. And I volunteer at the hospital on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I used to work there on Saturdays one day a week. And I can't tell you how many times that's happened. Where I was in the bathroom and somebody was leaving and you could just say, then never ran into water, they just walked out. They worked there or they were a visitor there or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of...
Yeah,
scary.
It's part of the message. We all know what we're supposed to do, but it's building the habits. It's
right.
It's making those good choices and making the best habits and understanding that it does make a difference in keeping you healthy.
So what should a patient do to protect themselves?
Yeah, there's a couple really key points. Patients need to wash their hands just as frequently as healthcare workers do. Whether they're in the hospital or back at home, that is the best way to prevent infections. You wash your hands, you get the germs off before you mm-hmm. eat, after you go to the bathroom, after you have contact with other individuals. It's really frequent hand washing. And then there are other things that are preventative, making sure that all your vaccines are up to date. There's a lot of diseases out there,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot of vaccines that work
yep.
to prevent people from getting those diseases. So making sure that you stay up to date, that you keep talking to your doctors and saying, do I need another vaccine? I know I don't like shots. I know I don't like that, but I know I need to get a vaccine today, asking. Also making sure that if somebody does get prescribed a medication, this is another big one. If somebody is prescribed a medication, you have to take your meds exactly as your doctor tells you. So often we hear someone say, well, I had a cough. I started taking the antibiotic. The cough went away. So I stopped taking the antibiotic because I felt better. That is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Right.
Because if that germ is still there, all it does is it makes it stronger.
And not only that, I use that example. I teach a family-to-family class for NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, for families who have someone in their family or know someone or live with, you know, boyfriend or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Who has a mental health issue. And one of the biggest things is, oh, the patient stopped taking their meds. And I say to the class when I'm there, I say, well, if you had the flu or you had a viral infection or something, you went to the doctor. And he gave you an antibiotic and told you to take it for 10 days. How many of you take it for 10 days? Maybe one out of 20 yeah. raised their hand. How many stop after you feel good?
mm-hmm.
And the rest of them all raised their hand. I says, well, it's the same thing with your loved one or your friend or whoever who has a mental health issue.
Yep.
They come out of a hospital where they've been regimented, taking medication, blah, 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 and doing this. So you eat at 8 o'clock and 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And now they're out. And they feel great. So they don't need the meds anymore.
Right.
Except the difference between them and us and your infection is that like, they've got a chemical imbalance of the brain that's not going to go away. And it's going to hit them again. And they're going to crash. Whereas you would just maybe get sick again. You know.
Yeah.
But it's very similar.
Yeah.
You know?
But, often we see patients that do stop taking if they have a bacterial infection and they get that antibiotic. When they stop taking that antibiotic, the bacteria is stronger and it's resistant now to the antibiotics we have available. So unfortunately, there are some people that get really sick and end up dying while they're a patient because the medication might stop working.
Sure. So. Lydia.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you. I'm a patient.
Okay.
I'm in a room. Fifth floor, third floor, whatever.
Okay.
And you were told to come see me.
Okay.
What do you say? Basically, I mean, you know, what's your I don't want to say spiel, but what
Right.
I mean, so, what do you say, like, if someone recommended a nurse or somebody recommended you come see me, what do you say?
I really kind of adapt it to each patient and the questions that they have. But usually what I talk about is what they're going to see while they're in the hospital.
Okay.
So if they're in isolation, the gown and the gloves that we use, making sure that their providers are washing their hands, making sure that they're washing their hands, addressing any kind of questions that they have that way, as well as what to do when they go home to make sure that they stay well.
What do they do when they go home?
Again, it's hand washing. It's following up with their physicians. It's taking their medications as prescribed. It's using good hand hygiene and personal care and doing those types of things.
If someone – it's just a thought that popped in my head, so forgive me. It's not on the script.
Yeah.
But I don't state it as script anyway.
That's
so,
all right. I don't have a script.
You know, say someone is homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many homeless people you see, but I'm sure you see a good percentage that come into the hospital for whatever reason. And what would you say to a homeless person? I mean, they're living on a street, you know, and I know this is Hunterdon County and it's one of the richest counties in the country and all that jazz. And I still don't know why I'm here, but I don't think any of us know why we're here. But, and I know someone, well, a couple people not too awful long ago said to me, well, I don't see any homeless in Hunterdon County. And I says, really?
Yeah.
I says, you know where the Walmart is?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a railroad track behind it.
Yeah.
Go across the railroad track and look down. You see those tents? What the heck you think they are? Yeah. They're homeless.
Well, luckily, we don't work in isolation. There's other departments within the organization that also help out. When we educate with what we have on hand and what we can help them with. Discharge planning becomes very difficult when it comes to our homeless population because we have to make sure that they have a safe discharge. So that really becomes a larger, bigger picture that we really have to work with everybody. We have medication access programs for those that can't afford medications. There's a lot of different things that we can do to really look at the whole picture because not everyone has the ideal situation. That's one of the things I learned in home care. You kind of never knew what you were walking into, so you really had to be flexible and work with what you have.
Right.
But really also knowing that nobody works in isolation. We have to have a lot of collaboration, a lot of discussion to make sure that we can really care for the patient.
Yeah, because you stop and think of a homeless person, they don't have too many available places to wash their hands or take showers or whatever, you know. So it's like a real touchy situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you could possibly see them back and back and back.
And then you're dealing with nutrition, mental health issues, dependency issues.
There's
a lot of different things that we have to be mindful of and aware of with the population.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, it's really important to take every patient's situation, what every patient is going through, what their resources are, and tailor the education to that patient. It has to be patient-centered. You can't just come up with one plan that works for everybody.
No, because no plan works for everybody.
Correct.
No,
it doesn't work that way.
I mean, I don't care what the plan is.
Right.
I don't care where it is. You know, it doesn't end up being a hospital.
Right.
No one plan fits everything because there are individuals and, you know, what works for me may not work for you or you, you know, so it's like, and it's the same thing like with meds.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
My body may adapt to it in a week, may take you 6 weeks or it may take you 3 months, you know, and that's the sad part because sometimes if it takes that long, they don't They don't believe it's going to work, and they're going to stop,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or there's side effects that you might have that I might not have, and...
Yeah, and, you know, in the class when they say, you know, when people say, well, my daughter stopped taking a medication, you know? Well, if you take a 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old girl, one young woman, and they put her on a med, and she gains 70 pounds.
Right.
Well, you think she's going to continue taking it?
Right.
Hell no. I wouldn't either if I was her,
yeah.
You know.
Right.
I mean, so it's like, you know, the side effects are, some of them are really brutal. Mm. I know my son, my youngest son has mental health issues. Mm. And I know some of them, and we've been dealing with it for 19 years, but he had medications. His foot would stomp up and down, up and down. So they give him a medication to stop that. Then his hand would go up and down, up and down. You know,
and a medication to stop that. And
yeah. And so, I mean, I said after a while, I said, "Whoa, stop!" You know, we've got to find something. We can't just keep adding something on to stop this because it creates something else, and we have to add another one on for that.
Yeah.
I says, you know, it can't work that way. There's got to be something. You know.
Yeah, and that's why it's really important that if you are put on medication and you're having problems with it. You're having problems getting it or paying for it or taking it because of side effects, that you keep that communication as the patient.
Right.
You reach out to your healthcare provider and you let them know what's going on instead of just stopping a medication to really keep that communication going both ways.
Right. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to the Huntington Medical Center show, and I am very fortunate to have with me two very attractive young women here. Anybody compared to me is young, so, you know. But I have Lisa Razumovich.
You four for Whoa, four, you
boy,
got
I'm
it.
All right.
Uh-huh.
An easy one, Lydia Arnold. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Hang in there.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Huntington is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Huntington at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Huntington, the voice for mental health in Huntington County.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Huntington on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand. Or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Huntington Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Huntington Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to the 100 Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the 100 County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and I'm very privileged to have with us today Lisa Razumovich and Liddy Arnold. And that's five for five, right, Lisa?
Yeah, that's okay. five times.
But I'll tell you what, if you didn't spell it the way you gave it to me, I would never have been able to say it. So, pat yourself on the back for that one. We've been talking about protocol what patients do to protect themselves and prevent infection prevention. And but a question, if a patient sees a nurse or a doctor that doesn't wash their hands either prior or after, should the patient say something, and who would they say it to?
Yes, the patient, absolutely. And it's not just nurses or doctors anymore in healthcare. You know, those are the main roles that we think of. But really, there are a lot of different roles in healthcare, in the hospital, in the doctor's office. And yes, like we were talking about earlier, everybody has to take an active role in their healthcare. And part of that is speaking up, asking questions. So we want patients to remind everybody to wash their hands if they forgot. It's very simple to do. You're the patient in the room. If a healthcare worker walks in and you don't see them wash their hands, all you have to say is, "Hi, it's nice to meet you. I didn't see you clean your hands. Would you be able to go back and wash your hands?" And it's as simple as that. We do have the alcohol hand sanitizers inside or outside every single patient room. And we also have the sinks inside every single patient room. There's a lot to do during the day. And sometimes as we're busy, or maybe the patient didn't see us, as we're walking in the hallway, we might use the alcohol dispenser in the hallway. And then that way, if the patient reminds us, the healthcare provider can say, "Actually, I was just washing my hands as I walked in. I used the alcohol on the way in. But thank you for reminding me." It's really everybody's responsibility to do that.
And if someone, say, doctor, nurse, whatever, whoever, was walking out and didn't use the thing, you yell after him. Well, "Hey, doctor, you forgot, you know."
Yeah, I mean, we don't want people to feel like they have to jump out of bed and chase people down. But there are nurses, there are other healthcare providers, there's nursing aides that work on the floor. So the patients can always report what they find to their nurse. And they can also track me down just by calling, the hospital operator or asking their nurse to reach out.
Okay.
So they can always do that as well.
I will say, last September, I unfortunately had to spend 10 days in the hospital.
Yeah.
It was most of the time I was walking around with my little pole and my thing, walking around the fifth floor going, "Oh, let me out of here." But
You didn't try to make a break for it?
No, I didn't actually, couldn't get the thing down the elevator, went out
down the
door.
Stairs.
But I have to say that, to my recollection, every single person, I'm not saying guest now because at that time I don't, but every professional, nurse, attendant, doctor, washed their hands, and I have to say that.
Yeah. We like to hear that too. We like to hear
Now, I know I had people, my own family, my own sons and daughter, and I don't think they did.
Right.
And it didn't register that they should, Right. I mean, because, I wasn't educated on that. Because I don't think they did, but now I know, God forbid, I don't want to go back to the hospital. Not that the medical center is bad, because it wasn't. I had a good experience. But
it's okay to visit and work. But,
yeah, exactly. It's okay to volunteer on Fridays. But even there, you see people and they have one dispenser right by the main door. And I'm by admitting on that thing. And I always, tell people where to go. Most of them want to go to radiology. So that's easy. Second floor.
Yeah, second floor right out.
As soon as you get off the elevator, But anyway, it's like you see maybe one out of 50 will use that when they come in.
Do you think it's because they don't see it where it is?
Well, right in front of admitting, there's another one. And I don't know that they can, they may miss them, but, You know what I'm saying? It's
there's a ton of reasons why people might not wash their hands, why someone might not wash. And one of the reasons we've tried very hard for many years to fix, and that's making sure we have enough product, enough dispensers in areas where people see them. Because if you see something, then you're much more likely to use it.
Right.
It's not visible and you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. And then really just providing this type of education, talking about what the right thing to do is and how it does work, how cleaning your hands is the best way to prevent infections. It prevents you from giving something to somebody else, and it prevents you from getting sick.
Right, right. And I know that they're all over, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they got one by the information desk.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, they got one by the elevators.
Yeah. I frequently see people using the ones right by the elevators.
Yeah.
Because they're waiting. What else are they going
to
do?
Yeah, so they have to have something to do. Yeah. So they, you know, rub this stuff in their hands. And,
yeah,
you know.
So they go over, they touch the button, and then they grab some of the alcohol, and then they rub their hands.
Ironically enough, I've seen, there's a fellow that volunteers. In fact, he volunteers every day, but I think Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But, and his name's Larry, too. So we call each other Brother Larrys, you know. And then there's that fella that's up on a fifth floor named Larry. You know what I mean?
No.
He's quite high up.
Oh, are you talking about Larry Grand?
Yes, that's it. And he comes down. He says, oh, my two brothers, Larry, you know. Aww. But I have seen people when I'm there talking to my, quote, Brother Larry on Fridays, that people will use the elbow to hit the button, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, now wipe your elbow off.
Yeah.
You know? but it just amazes me that, you know, they take things to that extreme when you have the thing right next to you. Right.
Yeah.
Hit the button and wash your hand, you know. Right. You know, but hit your elbow and then what do? You know, you don't do anything. So, you know, whatever.
The right thing to use your elbow for, and it's funny because when we do the education for the daycare,
mm-hmm.
we have our cute little songs for the kids to teach them that when they're going to sneeze or cough, that's when they should be using their elbow,
right.
You know, to make sure that you're not coughing or sneezing into your hand,
right.
That you cough or sneeze into the inside of your arm.
Right.
Or you use a tissue, but then you throw the tissue out.
And don't reuse
don't
it.
Don't reuse it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Don't stick it in. Yeah. Ebola outbreak. Was there anything that Hunterdon Medical Center has done for a protocol for safety?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, at Hunterdon Medical Center, we have a lot of protocols in place, a lot of emergency response protocols. We really try and plan for anything that might potentially come our way. Again, not only in the hospital, but also our physician practices as well. Mm-hmm. Specifically for Ebola, because that was something that was changing. Every time we turned on the news or I received information from the CDC or the health department, it was different. There was something different that was now being put into place. So at Hunterdon, we worked very closely. We had a task force that met. It basically involved someone from every specialty, every area within Hunterdon Healthcare, inpatient, outpatient, someone from every department.
Okay.
And we worked intensely to make sure that we got our protocol down. We tested it. We did trial runs. And then we just kept changing it. As the guidelines changed, we updated our policies and our protocols, and we did a lot of training.
Let me ask you something. I don't believe Hunterdon Medical Center had an Ebola patient.
We did not have a patient with Ebola come to Hunterdon Medical Center. Thankfully, what the state and federal health departments put together, the plan of triaging, identifying patients, traveling,
mm-hmm. right.
that worked very well, and it worked very quickly for us in New Jersey. So we did not have a patient with Ebola at Hunterdon Medical Center, but we still did our drills. We still wanted to make sure it was very unlikely that we were going to have a patient, but we wanted to be ready if it did.
By the same token, if you did, it's better to be prepared and not have to use it. You know?
We put all of our carts together, so we would have been ready at the drop of a hat. If a patient came in, we would have been ready to get that protocol going.
Right. And rightfully so, because, all right, the chances may be 1 in 100 or higher.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I don't know either. I'm just using that as a, you know, figure of speech. But you have to be prepared.
Correct.
You know, you don't know, you know, and you don't know whether somebody can walk in off the street who just came back from some foreign country or whatever and say, oh, I don't feel good, you know.
Yeah. So now what we've really done is we've taken that Ebola plan and we've adapted it to make our existing emergency protocols even better so that we have the capabilities now to identify a patient walking in the door by asking certain key questions like, have you traveled anywhere recently?
Where have they been?
Where did you go?
Well, I went to Bound Brook the other day.
Yes, traveling to, you know, Pennsylvania or Cape May. Yeah. But every patient now going through Hunterdon Healthcare, if you have any symptoms, cough, fever, any type of infectious symptoms, you're going to be asked, have you traveled anywhere recently?
Right.
So we have that in place now. So,
which is good because you don't know, you know, and at least if you're prepared and you never have to use it, that's fine.
Right.
But if you're not prepared and you have to use it, then you're screwed.
Then there's nothing to protect you.
Right. So. Right. Or the other people that's in the, you know, there also.
There's a lot of people at risk.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, there is. All right. We're in flu season.
We are
almost in flu
getting
season. Okay,
there.
Close to flu season.
Yeah, we haven't. That's what probably one of the number one questions I get recently is, has flu started yet? And we have not identified any cases for this flu season yet. We don't have any patients with the flu yet, but it is coming. It's every year, just like we know December comes every year. We know that our flu season comes every single year.
And I know the volunteers all have to get, I know I had to. I mean, I happen to get it at my doctor's because I happen to be there. And he says, why don't you just get the flu shot? I said, well, I get it at the hospital. It's free. He says, yeah, it's free here, too. And boom, you know, so I got it. And, you know,
yeah, that's right. Don't delay. Just get it.
Yeah, right. You know. But,
yeah,
you know.
Hunterdon Healthcare, we decided as a facility about 2 or 3 years ago that we were making the flu vaccine mandatory for all of our healthcare providers. So all of our physicians, all of our nurses, all of our dietary staff, our environmental service staff, our volunteers, everybody is required to get the flu vaccine every year unless they have a medical exemption. If they have a medical reason why they can't, maybe an allergy to the vaccine.
Right, right.
But other than that, we felt very strongly at Hunterdon Healthcare that it was something we needed to do to protect ourselves as the healthcare providers because we see our flu patients come in every year.
But
also to protect our patients that we're taking care of. And then you even expand that even further, and it protects our community.
Right.
All of our patients that are out there in the community, young, old, and everyone in between.
Ironically enough, this morning I had to call my doctor and have them fax over to the volunteer office the fact that I had my flu shot, that I don't have to go get it again, you know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Yeah, it's something that we now collect our data on every single healthcare worker, and so we make sure that every single one gets their flu vaccine every year.
Yeah, and, you know, I know that they stop certain people from TB shots for volunteers. I know that if they work with patients, you know, they get a TB shot. But everybody used to have to get it. So they stopped that because I'm just a greeter at the main door, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to get it anymore, thank God. No.
You're talking
another less needle I have to take. You
know? You're talking about that, the PPD or the tuberculin skin test, the TST.
The skin test is what they used
to do. Yeah, it's a skin test.
Come back in 48 hours to see if it's, you know,
anything there. Bubbles out and if it's positive.
Right.
Any healthcare provider that actually goes in and has patient contact.
Right.
Yeah, we require that. And then that way we monitor that as well every single year.
Now, the flu is all shots, right?
It is.
They used to have a nasal spray.
Right, but that was deemed as not as effective this year, so it was taken from the market, so now it's just the injection. That's the only thing that's offered.
That strikes me, you know, if someone can't take the shot, they could have taken the nasal thing, and you think if they took it off, that's a percentage of people that can't get the shot.
Well, there's, besides having a fear of needles, there's no, you know, there's no reason why somebody wouldn't be able to get the shot.
Unless they were allergic to, like you said, the allergic to the medication.
Yeah. If they were allergic, though, to a component in the shot, they would have an allergy to the same component that would have been in the nasal spray.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So the nasal spray was a great option that was introduced a couple years ago. For those people that are scared of the needles. And so we had the nasal spray available. But what they ended up finding out the last two flu seasons, like Liddy was saying, is that the people that got the nasal spray, they were more likely to end up getting the flu, as opposed to people that got the flu shot, that were more likely to be protected against the flu. And really, it was just, I think, one strain, one type of flu virus that the nasal spray didn't really do a great job protecting us against. So for this year, the CDC recommended don't take the nasal spray. Let us work on it. Let's see if we can make it better. And then we're just going to stick with the shots this year.
Okay.
So.
Well. You know, if it works, it works, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever works the best, I guess, you know, is the way it should be.
And the CDC actually just came out with guidelines because the flu vaccine is egg-based. They have flu vaccines. They have different varieties that are not egg-based. So if you're the type of person that doesn't want to take an egg-based vaccine, you can. There are other options out there. You just have to ask your healthcare provider about them.
Mm-hmm.
But the CDC just came out with a statement saying that even people with egg allergies, it is safe for them to have the egg-based flu vaccine. And they don't have the same type of allergic reaction as if, you know, they were going to eat an egg.
Right.
So now the recommendation is even if you have an egg allergy, go to your doctor, get the vaccine either as an inpatient or an outpatient. Don't get it in the pharmacy. You know, they want a doctor to give it to you. But even if you have an egg allergy, you can still get the egg-based vaccine and rest assured that you'd be safe.
Okay. I hate acronyms. Would you explain what CDC is for those that may not know?
Yeah, it's the Centers for, the CDC, that's my livelihood, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Right, I know what it is. I was just thinking somebody out there.
Yeah, you're testing me.
No, I am.
I know, that's okay.
I was, you know. But no, acronyms are me. We just don't get along.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see why they just don't say it. You know?
Yeah, but the CDC always produces evidence-based recommendations.
Right.
So they do their diligence, making sure that they are collecting all of the right information and making the best guidelines for everybody as a whole.
Right. No, I'm not knocking them. I just, wanted you know, to explain what the CDC stood for. That's all. Now, is the Infection Prevention Center in the hospital or is it in a separate building like some other places?
It is. It's in the hospital. We have our office located on the fourth floor in the hospital.
Okay. By the maternity ward, right?
It is. Well, it's the same floor.
Yeah, same floor on the other end.
On the other end.
I know where it is.
We don't get to hear the babies crying.
That's because they keep the doors locked.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
we're located there, and we're there Monday through Friday. And I don't want to say 9 to 5 because sometimes we're in at 7 in the morning and sometimes we don't leave until 9 at night. It just depends on what's needed of us.
Is there, if someone wanted to reach out to you and ask for whatever, question or whatever, is there a number to call or is it an email address or both or what?
Yeah, the easiest way, if somebody didn't have a pencil or a pen to write down the phone number right now, the easiest way that most people get us from outside the hospital is they just dial the main hospital number at 908-788-6100. And then they just ask the hospital operator to speak to infection prevention. And okay. then the operator then connects that person to either Liddy or I. Mm-hmm. Okay. I do have a direct phone number, though, if anybody did have that pen, and it's 908-788-6169. So that's my phone number at the hospital that people can reach out and ask questions if they had any.
Why don't you give it again?
908-788-6169.
All right. And what is the... What was the main hospital number again for those that may?
Yeah, the main hospital line is 788-6100, and that's also a 908
number. Correct. Is there an email address?
Yes, it is very long. It's my last name, so.
Whoa, okay. And you don't have one, huh? Why don't you just call the operator?
Yeah, I think that's the easiest route.
How come you don't have an email address? Arnold, you know, it's easy. You know?
They actually just shortened.
Changed all I know, because everybody that now. I deal with all sent me emails saying my new address is, you know, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. you know, Nancy Ramore and, you know, yep. Jen Exley and all of them, you know, yeah. they all sent me, oh, my new address. Okay. You know?
Yeah, it's shorter now.
Yeah, it is. Yep. But, hey, you know. It's still, you know, it's still their name or something is involved
right.
in it, you know. So,
it is. Yep.
And in your case, that wouldn't be very short, you know. I'm only teasing. Yeah. I can't thank you ladies enough for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Time has flowed
you.
By. You know?
Yeah, thank you.
But again, it's the Infection Prevention Center.
Yeah.
And if you would give the phone number again one more time, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure. So my direct phone number, this is Lisa Razumovich. I'm the Director of Infection Prevention at Hunterdon Medical Center. And my phone number is 908-788-6169.
Okay. And you don't have a direct phone, huh, Liddy?
I don't have a direct phone.
You have to get you through the main phone, right?
Absolutely.
And which is?
908-788-6100.
688-908, right? 6100?
908.
That was a test.
Yeah.
That was your test. Again, thank you so much, ladies, for being
thank
here.
You.
I really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
We'll be here same time, same station next week from 3 to 4. Got to think for a minute, you know. And time did fly by.
It did.
Yeah. So thank you again, and hopefully I'll see you in the hospital sometime. If you ever come through the main gate on Fridays from 8 to 12, you can say hi.
Yeah.
You know,
or
we'll have to do
I
that.
Know.
Now we're
going
to make it a point.
Yeah, now you have to come down to the cafe there and get coffee or something, you know, and say hi. You know. So we'll see you all again next week. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a...
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
There's a brand new fatality that we have in Johnson County. Again, another car drove into flooded waters and was swept away.
North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory upping the death toll in his state to 10 and 19 overall in the United States from Hurricane Matthew. High flood waters caused the breach of a levee in one town that's led to 7,000 people evacuating. Florida Governor Rick Scott says they're going to send help north.
We're going to do everything we can to help the people in Georgia, South, and North Carolina because some of the issues they're dealing with were actually a little bit harder than ours. They had a lot more flooding than we've had.
Republican vice presidential candidate Mike Pence on the campaign trail saying Donald Trump was a stand-up guy.
It takes a big man to know when he's wrong and to admit it. And to have the humility to apologize and be transparent and be vulnerable with people.
More news at usaradio.com. I'm Jason Wirt.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom.